Let's go to Judges chapter 7, starting at verse number 19, and remind ourselves of the story of Gideon's assault upon this huge Midianite encampment up by the Mount Moreh, the hill of Moreh, in the Jezreel Valley. Gideon has 300 select men, and they make this nighttime assault upon a group of more than 100,000. And this is what it says in the scripture. So Gideon and the 100 men who were with him came to the outskirts of the camp at the beginning of the middle watch when they had just set the watch. So his center group, more than likely, of the three groups of 100, they start the sound of the assault right around, we'd call it 10 o'clock, right around that time frame, when the second watch of the night has just been set. And most of the members of the encampment are probably going to be asleep or trying to get asleep. So how do they start the assault? They blew the trumpets and they smashed the jars that were in their hands. Then the three companies blew the trumpets, broke the jars. They held in their left hands the torches and in their right hands the trumpets to blow. And they cried out, "A sword for he who is and for Gideon." And so what happens is this huge noise wakes up a lot of the people in the encampment that had gone to sleep. And what do they see? They see on several sides of their encampment, many, many torches. And each torch, in their mind, would have immediately represented a fairly decent group of soldiers. And then they see or they hear the trumpets, and each trumpet would have represented a pretty significant group of soldiers. And they're hearing this yell, and they are scared. God puts fear into their hearts because they believe that they are being attacked at night by an enemy of indeterminate size, but apparently a fairly decent assault. And so they reacted in this way. Verse 21, every man stood in his place around the camp and all the army ran. So the Gideon's men, they stay in place. They're not attacking personally yet. All the army starts milling around really, really fast. And, well, they cried out and they fled. And when they blew the 300 trumpets, and he who is set every man's sword against his comrade and against all the army. So the Midianites and their allied forces began attacking each other in the semi-darkness of their encampment. When they see movement, they assume it's an enemy, and they just start killing each other right and left. And once you have seen enough of that going on, and you see dead bodies all around you, you're going to assume it's bad. And that sets into place a rout, a retreat. And so the army fled as far as Beth Shittah toward Zererah, as far as the border of Abel Meholah by Tabat. Now that means that they are now retreating along the line of march where they entered the Jezreel Valley. So they are retreating eastward down the Jezreel Valley. They're going to go past the city of Beth Sha'an, and they're going to make their way down by the Jordan River. So altogether, that's a little over 20 miles that this retreat has taken so far. And it's going to go through the hours of darkness that this is happening. Now, verse 23, the men of Israel were called out from Naphtali, and from Asher and from all Manasseh, and they pursued after Midian. So now that the attack has taken place and the initial victory has been secured, the cry goes back out, the call goes back out for the militia members that had gone away. and they start coming to the aid of the 300 in chasing down and annihilating this military force that had been bothering them and subjugating them for the past 7 years. Verse 24, Gideon sent messengers throughout all the hill country of Ephraim. That's everything to the south of the valley, saying, come down against the Midianites and capture the waters against them as far as Bethbara and also the Jordan. So he wants people that are already to the south of him to sweep down really fast to the Jordan River. And any of the fording places, the more shallow spots on the Jordan, he wants them to take control of those crossing areas and kill any Midianite that tries to cross. So all the men of Ephraim were called out, and they captured the waters as far as Bethbara and also the Jordan. Now they captured the two princes of Midian, Oreb and Zeeb. Now, I don't know if these are the guys' given names. It could be that they're military nicknames, because Oreb seems to mean raven, and Zeeb seems to mean wolf. So those are pretty significant military names if you were serving. And so these two princes, they get grabbed by the people coming down from Manasseh and Ephraim. And they killed them. They killed Oreb at the rock of Oreb. So the spot that they kill him, they give it a new name. And Zeeb, they killed at the winepress of Zeeb. They gave that place a new name as well. Then they pursued Midian, and they brought the heads of Oreb and Zeeb to Gideon across the Jordan. So they want to show, hey, the guys that you told us we should try to get to, we got them. Verse 1 of chapter 8. Then the men of Ephraim said to him, which this is kind of strange, they start picking a fight with Gideon. What is this that you've done to us, not to call us when you went to fight with Midian? And they accused him fiercely, and he said to them, what have I done now in comparison to you? Is not the gleaning of the grapes of Ephraim better than the grape harvest of Ebiezer? Now, remember, he's talking to people from the tribe of Ephraim, and he's referring back to his own clan within the tribe of Manasseh. And he gives them this illustration of, hey, you've done the much better grape gleaning than my harvest. The gleaning of grapes, that's what happened after the main harvest was out of the vineyard. And so he's basically saying, hey, you may have arrived late at the fight, but you got the better deal, because God has given into your hands the princes of Moab, Raven and Wolf, Oreb and Zeeb. What have I been able to do in comparison to you? And then their anger against him subsided when he said this, because they came to the conclusion, yeah, you know, you're right. We got the leaders. We took them out. That's our history now. So Gideon came to the Jordan, and he crossed over. He and the 300 men who were with him, exhausted yet pursuing. And by now, it's probably daylight. He said to the men of Sukkot. Now, Sukkot is another 12 or so miles down the Jordan Valley from Abel Meholah. So in total, they've gone probably about 30-some miles since they started the attack at about 10 o'clock the night before. So they're exhausted and they're hungry. And so they need a rest, and they need assistance with that. So he said to the men of Sukkot, please give loaves of bread to the people who are following me, for they're exhausted. And I'm pursuing Zeba and Zalmanua, the kings of Midian. So he's still got a couple of guys that he wants to track down. The officials of Sukkot said, "Are the hands of Zeba and Zalmunna already in your hand that we should give bread to your army?" So they have probably already given up their harvest stuff to the Midianites when they first passed through, probably several weeks earlier. And their concern is the Midianites are going to be back. They've been here for 7 years now. And until you have killed them and can show us the trophies, we're not going to be helping you out because that could get us dead. Now, Gideon does not like their attitude, and he tells them so. So Gideon said, "Well then, when he who is has given Zeba and Zalmunna into my hand, I will flail your flesh with the thorns of the wilderness and with briars." So he says, "I'm going to go and track them down without your help, without your subsistence assistance. And I am going to then come back here, and you leaders are going to be punished corporally. I am going to whip you. I'm not going to use a rod on your back. I'm actually going to take some of the briar plants that are nearby here, and that's how you're going to get whipped for the way that you've treated my heroic men." Verse 8. "From there, he went up to Penuel and spoke to them in the same way." So when you arrive at Sukkot, it's at the place where a wadi, a wet weather stream, is coming out of the highlands of Gilead. And upstream from Sukkot, about 12 or so miles, I think, is Penuel. Both of these places were given their names back in the time of Jacob. So it's another city that he stops at to get assistance because his men are hungry. They're exhausted. And so the men of Penuel answered him as the men of Sukkot had answered. And so he said to the men of Penuel, "When I come again in peace, I will break down this tower." So he's going to destroy their secure zone that they are putting a lot of trust in. We're in chapter number 8, but now we're ready for verse 10. "Now Zeba and Zalmunna were in Karkor with their army, about 15,000 men who were left of all the army of the people of the east, for there had fallen 120,000 men who drew the sword." All right, so that's where we find out the casualty figures up to this point. There are only about 11% of the original number. And you can be certain an 89% casualty rate is not good for the army. And so Zeba and Zalmunna, the two kings of this force, they are letting their troops get rested up because, remember, they've been moving along at a pretty fast pace as well. So they're on this probably a plateau area a little bit south of Penuel. And they evidently think that they are far enough away from the original battle site that they're not likely to have to deal with a pursuit force. But they're wrong, because Gideon is right there. So verse number 11, "Gideon went up by the way of the tent dwellers east of Nobah and Jogbeha, and he attacked the army, for the army felt secure. And Zeba and Zalmunna fled, and he pursued them and captured the two kings of Midian, Zeba and Zalmunna, and he threw all the army into a panic." So he has grabbed the two kings, and he's wiped out at least a significant portion of the remaining invasion force. Then Gideon, the son of Joash, returned from the battle by the ascent of Heres. Now, I think this is probably another wadi that goes probably from the region of Karkor down to the Jordan Valley. And I think it likely empties into the plain of Jordan, somewhere just a few miles south of Sukkot. So he has now got the two kings that the people of Sukkot said they were not going to help him because they were still alive. So verse 14, he captured a young man of Sukkot and questioned him. And he wrote down for him the officials and the elders of Sukkot, 77 men. So he grabs some guy that's probably out working in the fields south of Sukkot and says, I want the name of all your leaders now. So he gets all the names. And verse 15, he came to the men of Sukkot and said, behold, Zeba and Zalmunna, about whom you taunted me, saying, are the hands of Zeba and Zalmunna already in your hand, that we should give bread to your men who are exhausted? So he says, hey, here's the two guys that you told me you wouldn't help me because of. And then he took the elders of the city, and he took thorns of the wilderness and briars, and with them taught the men of Sukkot a lesson. So he keeps his threat, he keeps his promise, and he beats or whips with thorn bushes of some sort the 77 leaders of Sukkot that had refused him assistance in the pursuit of these two guys, Zeba and Zalmunna. He also apparently went back up to Penuel because he broke down the tower of Penuel and killed the men of the city. So he executes, after tearing down their tower, the guys of Penuel that had refused his assistance. And now that he's finished all of that, he deals with the two kings. Verse 18. Then he said to Zeba and Zalmunna, where are the men whom you killed at Tabor? And they answered, as you are, so were they. Every one of them resembled the son of a king. Now this is a strange thing here, because we don't have any other background material on what he's talking about. The Midianites have been coming in for 7 years now. And either on a previous invasion, or possibly on this most recent invasion, there were a couple of guys that Zeba and Zalmunna captured and then killed that really touch upon the heart of Gideon. And this is the reason why. He said, they were my brothers, the sons of my mother. As he who is lives, if you had saved them alive, I would not kill you. So Gideon had a personal stake in dealing with these two kings. They had captured alive a couple of his brothers, at least, and killed them when they could have let them live. And so Gideon lets them know, that's why you're going to die today. Now, verse number 20. So he said to Yether, his firstborn. And so this is where we get at least some inkling of Gideon's age. He has a son, his firstborn son, that is old enough to be running with the army, which means he must be pretty close to 20. And so that puts Gideon at least in his late 30s, possibly into his very early 40s. And so he said to Yether, his firstborn, rise and kill them. Execute those two guys, the two kings. But the young man did not draw his sword, for he was afraid because he was still a young man. See, it's one thing to kill people in battle, because your life is on the line and your adrenaline is up. It is another thing to execute a guy. And so this kid, somewhere near his 20th birthday, is too afraid to do the execution. Now, Zeba and Zalmunna said, "Rise yourself and fall on us, for as a man is, so is his strength." So they begin to mock Gideon to tell him, "Look, if you're going to have us killed, do it yourself." And so Gideon arose and killed Zeba and Zalmunna and took the crescent ornaments that were on the necks of their camels. So this ends the Midianite oppression. And it begins the judgeship of Gideon. But it immediately becomes a temptation for him to go beyond what he is supposed to be doing as a judge. So verse 22, "Then the men of Israel said to Gideon, 'Rule over us, you and your son and your grandson also, for you have saved us from the hand of Midian.' So they offer to him, as the savior of Israel at this time in history, the kingship of Israel, a hereditary kingship. You'll be the first king of Israel, and then Yether, your son, will be king after you, and then his firstborn son will be king after him, and you will be the new king of Israel. You will be the dynasty of Israel's kingdom." Now, Gideon knows better than to agree to this. Gideon said to them, "I will not rule over you, and my son will not rule over you. He who is will rule over you." So Gideon at this point has a very clear and firm understanding that Israel is a theocracy. It is a country that is ruled over by God. So he refuses this offer to make him king. Verse 24, "Gideon said to them, 'Let me make a request of you. Every one of you give me the earrings from his spoil.'" After a battle is over, all the participants gather up all the belongings of value of the forces of the other side. The dead are stripped. Their encampment is plundered. Any of the captives are all their stuff is taken away from them, and they are either turned into slaves or they are sold as slaves on the slave market elsewhere. So all of that stuff, they've got plunder, and some of it involves gold earrings that they took, because apparently the Midianites and their associated peoples had this thing about wearing earrings, because it says that right here. "For they had golden earrings because they were Ishmaelites. They answered, 'We will willingly give them.' And so they spread a cloak, and every man threw in it the earrings of his spoil." So Gideon has asked, "I want my portion of the plunder to be the earrings of all of these forces." So the weight of the golden earrings that he requested was 1,700 shekels of gold, besides the crescent ornaments and the pendants and the purple garments worn by the kings of Midian, and besides the collars that were on the necks of their camels. So he got all that extra stuff as well. But we want to zero in on the personal earrings of all of these soldiers that were killed. 1,700 shekels of gold, that's a weight. And even though we're not precise in our understanding of what the weight of a shekel was back at this time, we can say that the total here is around 40 pounds, give or take a few pounds. 40 pounds of gold that he has. Gideon made an ephod of it and put it in his city in Ophrah. So he makes a special garment of it. Perhaps he doesn't bother to melt them down. Maybe he just has them sewn onto this ephod. An ephod is a very simple piece of clothing. It's just folded in half and sewn along the side and along the top. until there's only a hole for your head and a hole for your two arms to stick out. And so perhaps he had all of these gold earrings sewn onto the outside of this thing so that he could wear it from time to time as a victory garment to show how special this victory was in his life, how it started his leadership as a judge. So there's probably some innocence to it at the very beginning, but it doesn't end up that way. Because ephods were also used in worship practices. And the next thing that we read in the book of Judges is that all Israel whored after it there, and it became a snare to Gideon and to his family. So over time, this victory vest turns into some sort of object of worship. And that includes Gideon being involved in that. Verse 28, the summary here, Midian was subdued before the people of Israel, and they raised their heads no more, and the land had rest 40 years in the days of Gideon. So Gideon is going to live on another 40 years in leadership. That's going to put him, if I'm guessing correctly, he's pretty close to 40 at the time, then he's going to be up in his early 80s when he passes away, and that makes good sense. Israel has peace on its borders. The Midianites don't come in any longer and cause them hassle. Now, we're almost out of time for the day, but I want you to understand as we get ready for tomorrow that even the best judges can deteriorate over time away from their original faith. And that seems to be the case with Gideon. And I certainly hope he repented of it before he ended his life. But if you want to get ready for tomorrow, read ahead a little bit, and we'll get back into the Word, God willing, tomorrow.